You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Watches Succession on a Monday.
From the Chris Wessling Podcast Studio, it's Around the NFL. Dan Hans is here with heroes Greg Rosenthal and Mark Sessler. I make a point to actually watch it on Sunday night with the wife. I get home, you knock it out, hit the hay. That's what it's like. That's married life.
In that order.
That's treating yourself.
That is. That's living right there. And I want to say, and you know, we are, you know, we try to keep ourselves distanced from it. But the reality is that we are employees of the National Football League. I mean, there is, you can't get around that. Roger, he's the one signing the paycheck. Okay. And with that in mind, I think there's a responsibility to the audience, and that's the global audience, not just the around the NFL audience, to be up front when we see something that a statement needs to be made based on the action today. So, Ricky, can I get the missive music? And this wasn't sanctioned by anyone above us.
Okay.
Or Greg and myself, but we're happy to hear it.
You'll be okay.
Okay.
Well, Greg will probably.
It's probably about Teddy Bridgewater's lack of a tackle. No.
No, but we will get to that later in the show.
It's waiting.
Here at the National Football League, we strive for excellence on a week-in and week-out basis. Our goal is to deliver to you, the fan, a quality product every Sunday from September through February. And we understand that we failed to clear that lofty bar in Week 10. We are working diligently to diagnose the issues that led to today's decline in product and appreciate your support and patience. Moving forward, please forward any remaining concerns over gameplay to @MarkSessler on Twitter.
I'm going to bear the brunt of a Sunday that did not deliver due to a host of blowouts.
Okay. Somebody has to be
the just the game. Okay, it was the gameplay in general.
I don't think this was like low
octane.
The best Sunday.
Sure.
And
but I'm not. I am an employee, and I do pretty much what they ask for the most part. This feels a bit beyond, but that's okay.
I think Brian McCarthy will be cool with that statement over there in NFL PR. Greg?
I mean,
used to work in that office.
I wasn't sure where it was going. I was like, is this specifically from the Browns, and that's why Mark has to apologize? Like, what's going on?
No, I thought it was pretty clear, the statement.
Okay. Okay. Yeah,
no, it was dashed off ahead of today's show.
Bad day. Right?
They can apologize to me. I think you're saying that I should probably apologize on behalf of the league or shield the issues.
I said any other issues from the fans,
right?
Forward to them, funnel it to Mark Sessler in his Twitter mentions, and then you'll handle any kind of the backlash.
No DMs. Just keep it in the public.
It's like you need to have bad Sundays, or you don't even know what a good Sunday
good
is.
Spin. Good spin.
It's like you need to have a tie at least once a season, so you know how like great it is to to have wins and losses and all the rest of the game.
This feels like the guy that should be, you know, absorbing the messaging.
What is the, speaking of Succession, the Roys, they have this term, everyone assemble in the pod or something when they have to do some type of crisis management. I thought Greg just spun gold there.
He would do well in that family based on what we've seen. I think.
There you go. Give me the Miss of Music one more time then. Now that we've recrafted and shifted the narrative, fans, chill out. Chillax, bros and sisses. If you didn't have bad weeks, you wouldn't truly enjoy the good ones. So you're welcome. See you next Sunday.
Contrast.
Peace.
Are fans angry about today? I feel like most fans, it's like if your team won, you're happy.
Not everyone, Greg, lives in your little rose garden. Okay?
No, I just mean I didn't know it
the
was.
Patriots are suddenly kings of the AFC.
I didn't know there was an outcry against Week 10. I hadn't heard anything about it yet.
I try to stay in tune via my TweetDeck app and to what the general vibe is of the football community. And, you know, an underwhelming week. But enough. We've released two statements already. And the show is 4 minutes old. No more on the matter. That's what statements are for. They speak for the entire organization. And again, Brian McCarthy, head of PR. I got you. I handled it. All right.
He's been busy.
I worked in PR for a brief time in the mid-aughts.
Oh, no.
It wasn't really. Wasn't
now
my
I'm working
thing.
In it, thanks to you.
All right. Today's show is going to focus, of course, on all the games that were played on this highly controversial Week 10. And there were some big blowouts and some unexpected blowouts. Some expected, some stunning in nature. I would put the Patriots-Browns affair in the stunning category personally. We'll get to that in a little bit. But let's start with the marquee matchup of the day. It was the CBS game of the week late Sunday. It was supposed to be a shootout between Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. It was anything but.
Snap to Wilson off play action. Deep drop, plenty of time. Rainbows deep down the middle in the end zone. It's intercepted! Intercepted by Adrian Amos!
What a spectacular play by Amos.
Spectacular play by the entire Green Bay Packers defense. And it's been that way for weeks now. Wayne Larrabee with the call, WTMJ. Aaron Rodgers returned to the lineup victorious, but it was that defense that played the starring role in a 17-0 win over the Seahawks at Lambeau Field. The Packers D permitted nothing to Russell Wilson in his possibly premature return to action. In fact, Seattle was shut out in the game for the first time since Wilson joined the team in 2012. Greg, the Pack D is on a heater.
It's crazy because every week that they play better, they lose more great players. Like during this game, Whitney Mercilus, who I guess he hasn't been great this year, but he's come up and had an immediate role with the Packers. He gets hurt. That might be serious. Rashawn Gary, who's been their best pass rusher on balance, hurts his arm halfway through this game. It didn't look great. We'll see how long he's out for. And yet they just keep rolling. They are so resourceful. Whatever it is that winners have, Matt LaFleur's got it at this point. The highest winning percentage in the history of the NFL in terms of coaches, 34-8. It's outrageous, and you just look at them and think they should and could be so much better this year than they have been so far, and yet they're 8-2. Like, they're going to get great players back, and I think they can play better on offense than they have, and yet they're winning games against good teams and in games like this one going away.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Packers team that I personally can really, really get behind because they've not given up more than 22 points since Week 3, and yet they haven't scored 30 since Week 3. They're winning in a different way than in years past when you kind of trusted the defense to crumble at some point when it mattered most down the stretch. They're doing it differently. I know this game was, everyone thought it was going to go, you know, right down to the bitter end, if not into overtime. I like a nice 17-0 butt smack once in a while because despite it adding to the week that you described, Dan.
Yes.
It kind of decisively separates two teams that I think once Russell Wilson came back, like, oh, this could go to either one of them. Actually, the Seahawks have a lot of issues. And Russell Wilson alone, I think he's going to get better than he was
Seahawks
this week.
Oh, yeah, you're on Seahawks are dead corner. You stuck a fork in them.
I forked them because, and I will be right, because it was the, you know, it was the right call at the time and it's the right call now. And Russell Wilson, even if he improves with his little finger, is not going to, he's not going to save them alone.
Time is still on their side, although it's becoming less so as we go on and deeper into November. I'm still not willing to rule out the Seahawks making a playoff run. But yeah, it has to start soon. And it was supposed to start this week in Green Bay. And before we turn the conversation over to Russell Wilson and whether he should have even been playing in this game, because he was not good. As good as Packers were on defense, and they deserve, Joe Barry and his defensive unit deserve all the credit they're getting, considering they've held Kyler Murray, Patrick Mahomes, and now Wilson in the last three games to a combined 34 points. Wilson was missing a ton of throws, Greg, and it changed the entire game. Now, it was bad enough, Greg, where I wondered, and was being contributed a lot on the telecast to rust, and I wondered if it was more like, is his hand healthy? Mm-hmm. This is a guy that came back in 4 weeks on a 6 to 8 week injury. It was a PR assault upon us as we headed into this game on Sunday. And he looked like a guy that wasn't right physically.
He missed a lot of throws. And I think rust has to be part of it because his timing was off. But his timing is often off. I mean, the whole point of Russell Wilson's career when it's going well is not about timing. It's about him holding on to the ball forever and, like, making plays. And they keep changing their offensive coordinators to find one that makes the offense kind of go in rhythm. And it doesn't really happen. And I think he bears some blame for that. But him having one of the worst games of his entire career coming off that injury makes you point to the injury. Even if Pete Carroll won't. He said it had nothing to do with his finger. He could have made all the throws. He was late on throws. And some of them early, at least, felt like the speed of the game, maybe he was not totally ready for that. And Tony Romo was ahead of that, thinking that would be a major problem for Russell.
And they went heavy shotgun. I mean, they are a shotgun-type team, but it was like to protect his finger. That does change, you know, your versatility on what you can do on some level.
Right. He had one deep throw to Swaim where normally you kind of expect him to put it out there, and a little late on that throw. Definitely skied some balls. So seemed like it was a little bit about the finger. I mean, Geno wouldn't have got shut out.
I saw your tweet there.
I mean, it's true.
I'll leave it at that. Russ Wilson said after the game of his repaired finger, that was not the factor. We can say whatever you want to say. It comes on my shoulder because I didn't fulfill those two plays, referring to the two end zone interceptions. I guess this is just the way it works, and Russell Wilson could be frustrated, and Seahawks fans could be annoyed that people are going to focus in and hone in on his struggles in this game. But he made it, I'm not going to say he made it about himself and made it a bigger story than it needed to be, but when it's built up
He did.
And I happened to switch on ESPN's pregame show briefly this morning, and I saw, like, I don't know if it was staged or a reenactment, but it was like Russell Wilson learning from the doctor in the office that you're going to be out 8 weeks, and him making like a very pensive, serious face. And I couldn't even tell if it was real or not. And I was just like, okay, I got to check out of this because I can't take any more of this stuff. Rap sheet referring to Russell Wilson as Wolverine and because of his quick healing abilities. All that stuff like being funneled our way. And then this performance happening. I mean, it's just kind of an extreme of two things.
It is. It's also, it says a lot about the whole Seahawks team, whose defense also has been better. There was some weather in this game as well. Dan, I don't really view you as the target audience for Russell Wilson messaging over the years.
Who is?
Who is? Everyone kind of...
You either. I mean, I'm not saying I am
people
either.
People see through it with him, though. There is something about him that even your
no,
basic...
I want to hear the rest of the
point,
though.
There is... I mean, he's not striking out with 100% of viewers. There are people that find that kind of stuff. They see it differently. I'm with you in the camp. I'm not maybe like as...
Why'd you single me out then?
Because you, I'd say I'm not as like locked onto this as you are, but you, whenever he releases any sort of statement,
I think he's the funniest person in the world. By the way, we watch here in the office, we have the truck feed, the Rashawn Gary injury. While you guys were watching the commercial, I saw the replay that was so gnarly that when they got back, Jim Nance was like, we decided not to show the injury because how bad it looked. It was gross. The other big injury, Aaron Jones sustains an MCL injury in this game. He had tears in his eyes. He sat on the bench, was ruled out quickly. We'll see how long he's out. But it should be noted that A.J. Dillon ran the ball extremely well He's been doing that for weeks this season, but he looks like a guy who could step in and the Packers won't lose much because he has that ability.
That 50-yard catch and rumble that he had down the stretch, A.J. Dillon, Dan and I noticed this. I love the way he dresses. He looks like when they did a bad job with action figures back when action figures were a thing, and they'd make like a regular-looking Joe super muscly, but he looks insanely muscly
well,
in his outfit.
Well, he is the biggest running back in the NFL.
Wow, he's a He-Man figure.
He looks good.
He's old school with the big shoulder pads and everything.
Yeah, he looks like an 80s guy, and I thought he was the difference offensively for them today because there was a key – I can't remember if it was third and one or fourth and one, but a key point in the one of the scoring drives where he broke through a tackle where he was hit in the backfield, ends up picking up that first down to keep the drive going, and that's how he got one of those other touchdowns too. I mean, as much as this feels like a blowout, it was 3-0 in the fourth quarter. Like, this thing was still up or down. And when you're dragging Bobby Wagner into the end zone, you're a bad man.
Yeah, you are. And one good note for the Seahawks, Jamal Adams got his interception.
So. He played a great game.
He did. He played very well.
He was very active.
You suggested that.
I felt it was coming. Yeah. And he got that INT. The man's got glue on his hands. All right.
Sometimes.
Let's move on to, oh, man, we got to get the Gravedigger on the headset because the Titans keep rolling.
Gravedigger. Titans have to win one play from the 7 to maintain their lead. Simeon takes the snap. Fires right side receiver, not looking, and it is incomplete. Incomplete.
Mike Keith. We're hearing a lot from Mike Keith this season. WGFX. The Titans defense bent but did not break on Sunday in Nashville. Tennessee surrendered a late touchdown pass to Trevor Siemian, but got that stop on the ensuing 2-point conversion from the 7, by the way. Bad, bad, bad false start. Put the Saints in a bad spot. 23-21 was the final. With the win, the Titans become the second NFL team to win 5 straight games over playoff teams from the season before. Whoa. Tennessee is also 7-0 overall against 2020 playoff teams this season, and they get a well-deserved layup next week against the Texans. So the number one team in the AFC, they battled here. Again, they did not really ball out on offense. And it should be a couple things here. Of course, Derrick Henry is out, but also Ryan Tannehill woke up ill with what I believe was a stomach bug. So he was less than 100% physically. And yet they score enough points, get the stops they need, and, yes, get some breaks from game officials, particularly on an egregiously bad roughing the passer call that wiped out a Tannehill interception in the end zone by the Saints. And then a few plays later, Tennessee punched it in for 7. So when you factor in that, and again, we got to make those plays reviewable. When you factor in that the Saints missed 2 more extra points in this game, and then the false start failed, followed by the failed 2-point conversion, you can understand why Sean Payton wasn't in a great mood when asked about the phantom roughing the passer that served as a major swing point in this game. Let's listen in.
What's the explanation on the roughing the passer play?
No explanation.
So
there wasn't an explanation. What do you want me to say? You want my opinion on it?
Yeah.
No opinion on it.
Okay. The Saints outgained the Titans 373-264, but Gravedigger? They still found a way, and they're doing it every week. That's what good teams do.
6 wins in a row. If they go on a run like this in January, they're playing back in Los Angeles again.
Look at you. You're on fire. You're feeling it.
I feel good about this team right now. It feels like everything that happens from here on out is just like getting ready for the playoffs, keep players healthy, get guys back healthy. They are getting somewhat healthier. Christian Fulton was back, but then Bud Dupree left the game early with an abdominal strain, and who knows what his status will be. Julio Jones is on IR again, so who knows how long he'll be out. But does any of it matter until the playoffs start for this team?
Yes, because getting the 1 seed is a playoff game, essentially. And losing Julio in the very week that he was off the injury report for the first time since 1992, it was crazy. Like, he was finally healthy, and he literally got hurt the next day at practice, and now he's out for a minimum of 3 weeks. And I think that's a killer injury for them, because losing Henry is one thing, But I think it would it works okay offensively if you've got the two guys outside. A.J. Brown was facing double coverage throughout this game, ends up with one catch, 16 yards. I hear what you're saying, Gravedigger. They're resourceful enough. They'll probably win. Looking at their schedule,
yeah, the schedule.
The Patriots are the only team other than the Steelers with a winning record the rest of the way. They'll get enough wins, and maybe they get that one seed. But it's going to be hard to be a good team offensively without Julio and Henry at the same time.
Greg,
that's all.
What Greg just said will be put into some sort of online headline, because everyone, and I've done this like 12 times, keep finding the reason the Titans will be knocked down a peg at some point doesn't happen, because you could get to your...
I mean the one seed matters is all I mean.
It absolutely does, but they are saying we're the one seed right now. It doesn't matter what happens to them, we've seen this 100 times. Good teams find a way to get over these hurdles over and over, and you could theoretically get out of your bye week much healthier than they are right now. Julio back soon after that. It's not like Julio has torn the world down for them either.
Well, I was going to say that. Like, he's always been a big addition to them in theory ever since the offseason. And then this whole year, he's given them basically nothing. I can think of one game maybe where he was really a difference maker. And so you lose him, but what you do need, because if Julio Jones is just not going to be the guy that they need him to be, if Derrick Henry is going to be out until January in a best-case scenario, you do need somebody else to step up. So here comes Marcus Johnson, for instance. He had 5 for 100 on 6 targets in this game. You're going to need contributions in places you didn't expect. I think that's the only thing, the last thing I'll say in terms of doubting Tennessee is I don't think it's sustainable to be 200 to 250 yards a game on offense. Even if you can beat up on bad teams for a while, that's going to come back to haunt you unless you could build out some more dimension to your offense.
That is true, and I will say the last two games they've played have been against pretty good defenses. The Saints are a really good defense.
Doing
obviously, the Rams are. And they have the Patriots defense in a couple weeks, which is also a really good defense, and the Steelers later in the year. But other than that, the defenses they play are not very good the rest of the season. So I think you could see the Titans offense getting back on track and learning how to manufacture yards without Derrick Henry, which these last two games rushing under 70 yards in both games. The Titans hadn't won a game with that few rushing yards in like 15 years or something before last week. So I don't remember the exact stat, but it's been years.
And then on the Saints side, before we move on, I just want to say that I thought Trevor Siemian played pretty well in this game. Mark Ingram had a lot of juice in Alvin Kamara's spot, but it's, they were missing 3 key starters on offense, and they need Kamara to be back on this field to give him that added dimension. Tre'Quan Smith had a bad drop in this game. So, the Saints, I think, are going to be okay, but they're going through it a little bit right now, Greg. They're 5-4, 0-2 since they lost James Winston. So they're a team to keep an eye on what happens next.
I am amazed this game was as close as it was. You're down 23-12 with 10 minutes to go in Tennessee, and Trevor Siemian gets him back in a position to win if it wasn't for those missed extra points. And you got a penalty from Adam Trautman, who is like public enemy number one with Saints fans in general, sets up like a 2-point conversion from the 7-yard line. Like, Siemian is playing well. I feel like this game, outgaining the tight, I know they lost the game. Like, this should be more support for Sean Payton winning coach of the year. Like, them putting together this many yards with this group of players is wild.
I'm with you. I mean, he seems extremely grumpy based on his sound clip.
The whole press conference was wild. He was out of it.
Right. I mean, it makes that Falcons loss a week ago doubly hurt, because like that, they couldn't let that thing go. But Mark Ingram, by the way, is the leading rusher
in the
history of the New Orleans Saints. Became that today. So even if he's just there for this chunk of season,
yeah,
it was well
nice.
Worth it.
Very good, very good. And what is an 800 winning percentage good?
Sure.
Because that's the Zeuser after 10 weeks in the locks. Because I locked up the Titans. I set up Sessler on that. Got him. Let's move on.
Well, it's factual. What am I going to say? No?
6'5", 245 pounds, 3-time Pro Bowler Cam Newton. McCaffrey swings out of the backfield, wide to the right. Newton's going to run right. In the grass, breaks a tackle. McCaffrey, Newton, everybody celebrating, touchdown right side.
First play, a touchdown.
Ooh, Cam Newton was active and in vintage form for the Panthers on Sunday, throwing for a touchdown, running for another, and sparking Carolina to a 34-10 win over the Cardinals, who were played shorthanded and sure looked like it in this one. Greg Rosenthal, a statement victory for Carolina and for Cam, and he sent a message to the rest of the NFL. hey, he earned this moment.
It was a lot, and if nothing else happens positive for the Panthers this year, at least they had this. And I expect them to matter moving forward with Cam Newton, but just to imagine that this was possible like a couple weeks ago would have blown my mind. To keep it in perspective, he had 8 yards, you know, passing. He threw the ball 4 times and 14 yards rushing. They won this game because P.J. Walker was good enough, moved the ball, and the defense was dominant. But what Cam Newton brings, other than obviously some short yardage chops, and he'll take over that starting job soon enough, was energy. I guess I got to, like, I got to believe, like, Christian McCaffrey and Hassan Reddick, who both said the energy before the game and giving Cam Newton credit, you know, for a big part of that, was unlike anything he had ever seen, was what Hassan Reddick said. And McCaffrey would said, like, this was just like a wild feeling from the team. They were so hyped for this game. Reddick, of course, a former Cardinal too. You're not going to give Cam all the credit for just like off-field stuff, but that is part of what he brings to you, is a guy that like everyone is hyped to play with, and they just destroyed Arizona. It was over quickly.
You could tell. I don't know if it was the first or the second touchdown, but McCaffrey and all the other Panthers just swarmed Cam. And I think one thing to make clear, because I saw somebody on Twitter, a Panthers fan, they were cool about it, but they were like, hey, you know, you were really burying the Panthers about what's been happening with their quarterback situation. Like, you don't understand the Panthers fans. We're excited about this. And I was like, this had nothing to do. Any criticism about the Panthers was about the organization. If I'm a fan of the Panthers and I grew up on Cam Newton, this is awesome. This is completely unexpected. And now he's back on your team and pumping fresh life into a season that felt like it was a deflating balloon, Mark Sessler.
Yeah, I mean, for their fans, I've heard from some too. I couldn't agree with you more. And Matt, this is not the plan at all that Matt Rhule, if you think it was weird for you, Matt Rhule probably feels like 12 days ago, I had no idea this is where I'd be either. But why not? I mean, why not? And whether you're into the Cam Newton experience, the overall one or not, I'm somewhere in the middle on it. It is interesting to me.
Charitable.
That it's happening. Well, no, because it's – look, like, honestly, they were in such a dark place. And you have to look at, like, for the Sam Darnold business, like, you've never thought, oh, well, Sam
Who?
Darnold, if anything, is going to bring intense energy to the locker room. There's been a void of that at quarterback. And so change things.
Yeah, I think Darnold, and I love Sam Darnold. It's sad what's happened with his career, but he's never been like some type of dynamic leader of men. And Cam is like a guy who's just got like he's dripping with charisma. So like all these things, it makes sense why the organization like it was such a shot in the arm. And it also like makes you think. And I know once we see Cam playing again, you're gonna get a better idea of who he is now compared to where he was 5 or 6 years ago. He's not the same player anymore. But he probably should have been on a team. Three months ago. It just never happened.
I think he wanted to start, you know, and there weren't opportunities to start. And now
his phone was ringing based on what we heard.
Now there is one, and he's getting paid well for it. I think he'll get a little more juice in his legs as it comes, but he was a great goal line runner, and he was a very good runner in general. He brings that, you know, element to the table. I mean, last year in New England, like, we don't need to project how he's going to be helping them in the red zone with McCaffrey, who had a really nice game overall. He did go out with a head injury briefly, but they said after the game he's totally fine. He'll be good for next week. All this said, it's like they won because their defense, you know, bum rushed Colt McCoy. I mean, almost the first play of the game, Hassan Reddick forces a fumble on McCoy, who also throws an interception later in the first quarter. It was a 2-touchdown lead at that point. And this Panthers defense, I know they're not like amazing each and every week against some great competition, but when Shaq Thompson's been on the field, and he was everywhere today again, they've been pretty special. They've been one of the best defenses in the league. They're 5-5. They are in the playoffs if it ended today. I know that doesn't mean anything, but they are in that ugly NFC mix. And I think with a defense that good, they'll probably stay in that mix until the end.
They're totally relevant. And it pains me to say it, but the backup quarterback experience, because I think we all like kind of super fall for these dudes for the week after they succeed. And I was totally viable on the Colt McCoy front to do that. But it's the Mike White experience. Colt McCoy, you love these guys rising up out of nowhere. They kind of remind us of like if we were thrown into a lineup in our deep fantasies. I mean, it would be much worse. But
right. he got,
yeah. it just doesn't last. It doesn't last 2 weeks in a row. The other shoe always.
That's what drops. And Colt McCoy and any other guy, Mike White, they're competitors, so they want to be out there. But in truth, the best thing for their careers would be just to have the game and then disappear again. But I think Colt, you know, Colt bought another 2 to 3 seasons with last week. He'll be all right.
It's a big loss, though. You know, the Rams are still coming up on Monday night, but now they, you know, can tie in terms of the one seed. The Packers are now tied with the Cardinals. Obviously, they lose or they have the tiebreaker, so they're even ahead of them there. Like, these games do matter. It sounded like Kyler Murray was close to playing, but between him and Nuke, I mean, they are missing a lot of guys in general. Chase Edmonds, like, they've survived, but they need to get those guys back now.
And I'll tell you what, it's not easy suffering through a loss like this, but I like what the Cardinals are doing here because I think they saw what happened last year when they tried to rush back Kyler to save the season and it ended up kind of submarining the season. Even if it's going to cost you a game or two, and they're 1-1 now without these two guys, it will help you in the long run. Hopefully, those guys are back.
To be 1-1 is not the worst of fortunes.
I bet they would never admit to it because you never admit I'll lose. That's fine. They would sign up for 1-1 without two games without Nuke and Kyler. All right, we're gonna get the pipe rattling around in here right after the break.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up, picks in all the sports, football, basketball, we do them all, but here's a preview of this week's episode. Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay, so you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs...
Yeah, like check out these hair. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, tapping, hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you have to do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean.
Yeah. But I mean, like John Cena got him. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot, and now he doesn't. Do you think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or like put a sign in your yard, but.
All right, so what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
But let's say you're like Bill Self and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbionica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbionica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbionica.com. C-Y-M-B-I-O. T-I-K-A.com.
Heineke steps up, throws to the corner of the end zone. It's got Carter caught. Touchdown. DeAndre Carter. 20-yard touchdown pass from Taylor Heineke.
Brad Weinstein with a call for WTEM. Tom Brady picked off twice in his first six throws, and the Bucs were in trouble because Tyler Heineke was on target during a clock-slaying 19-play drive that sealed a 29-19 upset. Huge upset by Washington over the champs. Yes, I said it before. Shook the pipe. He's here. And Shook, this is how it goes in our league. If you don't show up ready to play, you'll get embarrassed by anybody, and we saw that today.
Yeah, if you sleepwalk out of the bye week directly to the nation's capital, you'll get caught. And the Buccaneers got caught extremely early, Tom Brady being one of them. A guy who is typically really good out of the bye week was not really good today and helped the Buccaneers dig themselves a 13-point hole. Really, before they knew what had happened. It was really in the second quarter they were down 13-0 and had to fight their way back. And for the first time, probably this entire season, we saw a little bit of the Washington defense we thought we were going to see all season based on what we saw last year. Even after losing Chase Young to an injury that sounds pretty serious, they were tough, they were gritty, they forced turnovers. They didn't get beat on big plays for the majority of the game. They did on a pass to Mike Evans that made things tight late, but then Heinicke responds, and the offense responds. Terry McLaurin comes back from a collarbone injury that cost him a little bit of time earlier. They go on this drive that lasts over 10 minutes, and then Riverboat Ron comes out, goes for it on fourth and goal from the one.
There he is.
Gives it to Antonio Gibson, ball game, and a stunning victory for a Washington team that has been extremely, well, more down than up, but definitely up and down this season.
That riverboat had been parked on River's Edge for a number of years there, but
stuck in the mud.
Glad to see it back out on the waters, and that they're going to need to keep doing that, because we learned this morning before the game that Ryan Fitzpatrick is not expected to return this season, something that does not surprise Greg nor Mark.
No,
what about me?
Well, I'm just saying that Greg and I were saying we thought that he basically was soft selling this into an early retirement.
Yeah, well, stop singling me out, Sessler.
Well, no, you too. But also, Dan.
Thought about that. Yeah, they were saying his hip, like.
I'm certain.
The report on it was funny that they did a follow-up MRI and none of it was good, and he's back on crutches. I mean, he's an older guy coming off a hip injury, and I don't even know if you would want to go back to him right now. Not that Taylor Heinicke has played well, but this is just like the team you have, and you just pulled off one of the drives of the season. To get a 10-minute drive against the Bucks to win the game, 19 plays, 80 yards, to seal it, that it doesn't really get any better than that. To do it against the Bucks run defense is amazing. It's one of the most surprising results.
And
of
longest drive of the campaign for
anything. And insult to injury for the Bucks on the last play of that drive, Vita Vea, who's so important to what they do in their front four, the nose tackle got carted off with injury, and that's a bad one too, Shook, because we saw him. They lost him last year, and they felt his absence a year ago as well.
Yeah, and we saw how effective he was early in the season. There was multiple games that they played earlier this year where Vita Vea was destroying any offensive lineman he was faced up against, to the point where it was causing serious problems for opposing passers every time they dropped back because they had a man in their face on every snap. And so, you know, this defense has not really played up to par in the last few weeks to begin with, and especially in this game today. And losing a guy like that, that takes away a strength on the interior. Not that that Washington ran the ball well today, because they didn't, but teams in the future are going to be able to find more success up the middle, which is going to put more onus on the rest of the defense to perform. And right now they're already not performing at a level that you want them to, that you expect of a defending Super Bowl champion that looked really good about a month ago and lately not so much.
I mean, they also are down four corners and they lost two during this game. So yeah, I am struck by the difference of how they came out of the bye week last year. You know, they go undefeated after that and win a Super Bowl, and how they come out of the bye week this year, an injury plagued season, gets more injury plagued, and Brady after the game is just, he's dying. And I, you know, everyone like is going to kind of pile on that he's not a good sport. And I just think of that Bill Parcells, you know, quote about how he says, like, as you get older, the losses are so much tougher than the wins are good. And you could just tell he was like, his insides were like, he was just trying to end that. And it's not a good look or whatever, but
what happened exactly?
Just, I mean, it was like a 45 second press conference that he is answering very short, politely, but short answers, tries to walk off after 45 seconds. The guy from The Athletic, Greg Allman, I believe, was like, can you stay a little more, Tom? And they keep asking him questions like, how are you feeling right now? And he's like, I don't like losing. And then he ends up walking off like 45 seconds later after about a minute and a half.
Well, you're not supposed to do that.
Right.
Bottom line, like, you have an agreement to give the reporters
right.
the time. So
he's fired
it's not
up.
A great look.
No, and he wasn't. It was more that he just reminded me of Belichick and Brady after like Super Bowl losses, how it just feels like everything, like if you base your whole life around this one thing, when you lose to the Washington football team,
right.
it's like you have nothing left in your being.
And just to add on to that before, Shook, I throw it back to you, you know, this performance, which Bruce Arians in his press conference called embarrassing, and then a reporter asked if wide receiver issues, injuries, played a role in the loss. Arians pulled no punches.
No, I had nothing to do with receivers. It was him.
Shook, is it just me, or is that like kind of a good thing that Brady isn't playing for a coach that treats him with kid gloves? I think that's actually another sign of a good landing spot for Brady in general.
Yeah, absolutely, because at this point, it'd be super easy for any coach to just be like, well, he's Tom, he's the greatest ever, he can do whatever he wants, but on a day where you throw two interceptions, you need to be held accountable. And I know Tom would be the first person to hold himself accountable, but as a team and as a coach, you come off of this loss, if you treat that guy as he's infallible and we go into the next week and everything's fine and he doesn't deserve any criticism, well, you start to get other guys looking at him and saying, well, hey, we're on two different planes here, and I know he's the greatest of all time, but we need to win football games, and he didn't play like the GOAT that he is, and we need him to play better than that. So as a leader on your team, he needs to be the first guy in the room to stand up and say, look, guys, I didn't play well enough for us to win, and that's on me. And if a coach is going to do that for him as well, it keeps things even, because you know, in this season, you deal with injuries, you deal with so many different things to try to get to the end of the year and get to the Super Bowl. You got to have everybody on the same page. So it's good for them. But you know, you talk about Tom being upset after the game. You could see it in his face in the sideline as Washington's slowly getting down the field and the time's ticking off the clock, and Tom is chomping at the bit, ready to get the ball back and go lead another comeback win. And then he never gets it with any time left and with any real chance, because they're down, you know, multiple scores at that point. I could totally understand why he was so upset after the game. He had the opportunity taken out of his hands by a defense that he's been able to count on in the past and couldn't count on today.
All right, so frustrating game for the GOAT and the defending champs, but as we learned last year, should not count them out in November. Let's see how they bounce back next week. But let's now move on, Pipe, to what happened across the sidewalk here at SoFi Stadium.
They're going to go for it. Toss right to Dalvin. Turns it up. 35. Leap for the first down. Ball came out, but the Vikings recovered it at the 29. They'll say Dalvin's down at the 32. Fresh four for the Minnesota Vikings.
Paul Allen, KFAN, with the call. Don't try to figure out the Vikings. Anytime you try to figure out the Vikings, they'll make you look dumb. Kirk Cousins threw a pair of touchdown passes to Tyler Conklin. You heard me. Dalvin Cook rushed for 94 yards, touchdown, and that game-icing first down. And the Vikings bounced back after a little bit of a slump here. They beat the Chargers 27-20. Shook. More of the same from Minnesota, right? You just, they'll look bad one week, they'll look great the next. Well, sounds like they look pretty good, great in this one.
More of the same, but a difference, and a key difference that I think could help them going forward if they can kind of stay consistent. This is a game that the Vikings typically would lose this year. They go into halftime with a lead, and even on the broadcast, they mentioned coming out of the break, well, you got to feel a little nervous if you're a Vikings fan right now, because they've been here before and they haven't followed through. And for a little bit there after halftime, they were again trailing, and yet they responded. And not only did they respond, but they responded with emphasis. Two long touchdown drives. The second one was a 12-play drive. Eight of those plays were running plays. They capped it off by giving it to Dalvin Cook, slamming it over the goal line for a touchdown. It was emphatic. It sent a message to the Chargers that, hey, we're going to rely on our offense, we're going to rely on our ground game, and we're going to run it down your throats, and we're going to score, and it's going to be on you to stop us. And ultimately, the Chargers, their last three defensive possessions, couldn't get a stop. Two touchdowns and then the game-ending drive with that fourth and one conversion. And I felt as they tossed the ball to Dalvin Cook, he gets around the edge and across the sticks for a fresh set of four, as they said on the call.
Yeah, I like that.
That's exactly how this game should have ended, with the Vikings doing it on the ground, doing it with emphasis, making a point that, hey, you know what? We've lost games like this in the past. We're not losing this one today.
I think another change for them out coming off the last 2 weeks, and there's been a lot of heat on them, where Justin Jefferson, your best player, was targeted 9 times over the last 2 weeks. They got away from him last week when they, you know, they got up early, they built 14 point leads over the Ravens and did not lean on him. 11 targets today, 143 yards off 9 catches, totally dominant. One of the better catches you're going to see all year, and one that helped them ice that game and get them to the Dalvin Cook fourth down carry. So that, I think, is something, if you're the Vikings, don't get away from that again, because the inconsistency is sometimes like, just keep doing what works, please. And their defense, without Patrick Peterson, without Danielle Hunter, held Justin Herbert to his lowest yardage total all year and stymied them down the stretch. I mean, I thought these two teams feel like mirror teams to me in the NFC and AFC, where every game comes down to the end. You don't know what's going to happen. And the Vikings, one of them had to close it out. We'd be saying the same thing about the Chargers if it was reversed.
But I like that point a lot, but I also feel differently about these teams. I feel like the Vikings are just like all over the map, where I start to worry, Shook, if I'm a Chargers fan, that they might be pretenders. Do you get the vibe that they're a team with major issues or maybe fatal flaws here?
Yeah, a little bit, especially in the last month. Their offense has just not lived up to what we thought it was earlier in the season. And the defense, especially today, has not picked up its end of the slack. And, you know, you think Brandon Staley comes over after engineering that Rams defense that was the best in the league last year. This defense just hasn't had the teeth that you expect it to have, and especially in key moments, this game being one of them. And Justin Herbert's going to have these games where he throws an interception or he's not as sharp as you'd like him to be, and he's been like that lately. You need your defense to pick you up, and they just haven't played complimentary football in that regard. And that's while still being largely healthy on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, they have Austin Eckler. They're able to still move it. Sometimes they moved it in the second half a little bit. But, I mean, there was a telling moment for me late in this game in the fourth quarter where they were, you know, within goal-to-go situation, and they get stopped, and Brandon Staley, down 10, takes the three. And mathematically, it makes sense. You know, you're down 10, you take the three, you get a stop, you try to score the game-tying touchdown, potentially go for two to win the game, right? Well, problem is that defense couldn't get a stop. And this is a guy who loves to go for it on fourth down. It felt passive. It felt like you were playing kind of not to lose, or at least to give yourself a chance. The aggression in these Chargers has not shown through in the last month. And I think that's a big reason why they are where they are at 5-4.
It was shocking. I mean, in a way, these teams are mirror teams, but it was the opposite of what you would expect. The Vikings were incredibly aggressive today in their play calling. Like, as aggressive almost as any team I've seen in a game-ending situation all year. It was first and 25 on that last drive, and they threw it three straight times. That is exactly the spot where Mike Zimmer this year has run it multiple times in a row. They went for it on fourth down. The drive before that, too, they were backed up in terms of penalty, and when you would think they would prioritize taking time off the clock, they threw it in situations where even the most aggressive coaches often will run it in that situation, whereas the Chargers didn't just blink in that fourth down situation there, but also punted, I think it was on the 40 on the other side in the first half of the game. It's very surprising to me to see that Staley did not have as much confidence in his offense, because I don't think it was about him having confidence in getting stops defensively. He just did not think his offense was playing well enough. Maybe he was right.
All right. Now, Shook, I know you watched the Browns professionally today. Are you prepared to talk about them?
Of course. You know, hey, man, I separate the two very easily.
Stiff upper lip.
Has time. Fires down the middle for Bourne. Reaches up. Extends. Lands in the end zone. Between two defenders. Touchdown, Patriots.
Two big throws on this drive by Mac Jones, your quarterback, to get him off the plateau.
What does that even mean?
Bob Sochi and Scott Zolak with the call for WBZ. Mac Jones threw three touchdown passes. Rookie Ramondre Stevenson rushed for a career-high 100 yards and two scores. The Patriots stick it to the Browns, 45-7. Blowout City. Mark, heading into the weekend, we all kind of agreed that this felt like a close, low-scoring, maybe a field goal difference type of game. How did we end up in Grizzly blowout territory?
Well, I think the other thing that we brought up, this was on my mind, I wonder if Shook agrees, that the Browns needed a signature win. You needed to go into New England and do something that basically, had they won this game, they'd be in the driver's seat of the division right now. They'd be looking arrow up, and we'd be saying, we think differently about them a week ago. Instead, we're right back in the darkness. And this was the most discombobulated Browns loss of the, I will say, of the Kevin Stefanski era, because I don't care about some of the blowouts last year where they were figuring themselves out. They were outcoached. They were outplayed. You know, by halftime, it was utterly clear that Mac Jones was putting together a performance three times that of Baker Mayfield, who I think had his worst start in eons. I mean, it was an absolute debacle. New England's defense adjusted very early to what Cleveland did. They had a nice opening touchdown drive, and we've seen this before, and then nothing after it. And in reverse, this is so Bill Belichick, it's so Josh McDaniels, and the play-by-play guys were going nuts over this early on, but they basically used the aggressiveness of Myles Garrett and what Myles Garrett presented to dump off screens where he would be, where there was no one, to eat up big chunk yardage, to invite him into the fold and run reverses where he would be. I thought they did a great job with Cleveland's defense, who came into the game 10th in allowing points and were out of this thing early on. It's Cleveland and New England both want to come in and run the ball. I know the Browns do not have Nick Chubb. New England was missing people, too, and their players stepped up, and they had a season high in rushing yards and beat up a Browns defense that looked totally asleep at the wheel to me.
This was a case of a good opening game script, so good preparation versus good in-game coaching, because Kevin Stefanski and Joe Woods got completely out-coached by Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels. I mean, to the point where by the time you got to halftime, it was clear that the Browns were going to need a miracle to come back and win this game. They had the great opening drive, and then Baker Mayfield throws an interception, and they score quickly, and before you know it, it's 21-7, and the Browns have no hope left in them. Ramondre Stevenson just bullying his way through the Browns' punchless defense. They couldn't make tackles in the open field. They couldn't make tackles in traffic. They had him on the 1 yard line and allow him to somehow squeeze through for a gain of six, and they end up going on a 99-yard touchdown drive. And defense or offensively, every time the Browns tried anything, the Patriots were right there with an answer. I mean, it's like they knew what the play call was essentially, because defensively the Browns do not adjust. They haven't adjusted all year, and they didn't adjust. Myles Garrett even talked about it after the game. But offensively, they also didn't adjust. And I know, you know, Baker Mayfield goes out with an injury, and you don't have Nick Chubb, so you don't have to be able to rely on the run. But this is one of the weaknesses in Kevin Stefanski, where he's good at game planning, and he's good in certain situations where he knows a team's weaknesses. But when it comes to running into a brick wall of a defense, he just kind of folds. He just hasn't been able to answer that with anything better. And I don't know if it's a lack of talent. I think they have enough talent to make it work. But it's clearly a lack of execution and ingenuity offensively. And it contributed to this blowout where, I mean, you had Mac Jones on the sideline cracking up with his teammates, and Brian Hoyer going 3 for 3 for 85 yards and a
revenge
touchdown
game
pass
for
to
Hoyer.
Kobe Myers. I mean, now, Greg. Yeah, it was a dominant performance. The Browns got completely outclassed.
Yeah, and Connor Orr wrote a good piece today on SI.com. Connor, a Browns fan himself, saying that, you know, the Browns are 5-5, so it's like, you know, 4 years ago, it would have been a celebration to be 5-5 in November, but I think the way that the bar was raised this year, especially, that's why you hear so much frustration from Browns fans about how hot and cold they've been, and that's who they are. At a certain point, you got to believe a team when it's telling you they are what they are. We're an inconsistent team that could be good 1 week, bad the next, and you can't trust them. The Patriots, on the other hand, Greg, they are not inconsistent. They've been consistently great now for a month, and what we saw from their quarterback, the rookie quarterback, was, hey, FYI, if I level up in my game, we can really make a run here. And he did it on Sunday.
His anticipation and just knowing what the defense is going to do and ball placement when it's on is awesome. But I think such a big part of it is, like, he's got players making plays for him. And I know they're not like the best skill position group in the world, but that throw to Kendrick Bourne that everyone was going nuts on, where he sticks it between two defenders, like, that was a great catch. Jacoby Myers made a couple plays for him. Their offensive line, it's not skill position players, but they got Trent Brown back today for the first time all year. And they've got a great-looking offensive line, the one that we talked about coming into the season. It took a little while, but the last 3 or 4 weeks, they're up there with one of the best offensive lines in the league. So suddenly, then you surround Mac Jones with that, and you surround him with Josh McDaniels, who I've always believed is a great play caller and a great offensive coordinator, and has shown he can win with different quarterbacks. But Belichick gets credit for that. But, like, when they've won with Jimmy G and Jacoby Brissett and Castle, and, like, Josh McDaniels has been there for that. It's not just been Tom Brady, and it's hard not to be very high on this Patriots team right now. Like, they are coming together, but I also think this was a matchup thing. Like, you were right, Shook, when it was 21-7, it felt over, but that's because of the Browns more than the Patriots to me, because they just don't feel like a team that can come from behind. They feel like what people used to say about the Ravens, which I never totally bought into, which is that they are a bit of a front-running team. If you get them a couple scores down, it's not happening.
You can tell what's going to happen in a Browns game about 10 minutes in. It's been the way it is this year. Joe Batonio called them a Jekyll and Hyde team. The Patriots had 3 touchdown drives of 90 plus yards. They took a bomb inside their own house and blew up the ceiling. There's
Stevenson,
no ceiling.
Stevenson's a beast too. You know, Damian Harris misses this game with a concussion, and it didn't matter because they've got their running back room right now with Brandon Bolden playing so well. It's pretty great with Stevenson, Harris, and Bolden.
Look out for the Patriots, and the Browns have dropped 4 of 6 and have not won at New England since 1992 when their coach was?
Bill Belichick.
And, yes? And the same year I was born.
Well, you know,
I was in college, so that should tell you something.
That seems unnecessary. All right, Shook, thank you. You've said it all. You do it all. You're the man, the pipe. Follow him on Twitter. check out all his great stuff on NFL.com, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for the plug. I'll see you guys later.
Yep. All right. We'll take a break, and we'll talk about the first tie of the season. God, I hate them ties. Up next.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbionica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbionica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbionica.com, Symbiotica.com.
Throws the out pattern to Freiermuth. He loses the football. It's free on the ground. It is the Lions football. The Lions picked it up again. The second forced fumble in overtime, and they come out of there with it. Unbelievable. Wow. There's the mistake you needed.
All right. Oh, are we going to give the Lions the bongos on a tie? You know what? Let's give it to Dan Miller, the voice of the Lions, who we hadn't heard this season until now, WXYT. The Steelers in position for a long field goal attempt. The Lions stripped rookie tight end Pat Freiermuth and fell on the ball with 9 seconds to play. It was the turnover that clinched a 16-16 tie. What do they say? It's like kissing your sister, which is always, we don't need it.
I don't have a sister.
I have a sister, and yeah. I just don't like the visual. In dreary Pittsburgh, Mark, this is a hideous four-hour game just about. Ben Roethlisberger went on the COVID list, did not play. Mason Rudolph was completely Mason Rudolph, and ends with Detroit mercifully avoiding the loss column for the first time in almost a year.
Totally unrewarding basket of treats.
Not to interrupt, but you took this game as you often do in the draft process. You like to get a couple bloodbaths in there so you don't have to worry about it. So how fitting on a day where the Browns crap their pants, you get a 4-hour slog tie. Well, that sucks.
What does that like little girl say on the thing? When it rains, it pours, baby. And that's what happened today.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The little girl says it on the thing.
It's a slogan on the salt thing. It's some sort of salt that people buy. What is it?
It's a very famous blue salt.
Yeah, I don't buy it, but it's a salt product.
You're out on salt, too.
I don't know, but this thing, by the way, they're like, it's not going to be four quarters. It's going to be a full five. Enjoy it. A total ill basket of treats. It was a hot mess. I mean, the problem that was so frustrating was that both teams had chances to win this in overtime, if not before. I mean, the Steelers fumbled twice in overtime. The Lions, Santoso, their 48 field goal kicked miss, just a disaster for them. It just went on and on. The game had 16 punts. Jared Goff averaged 1.5 air yards deep into overtime. Mm. Goff was playing, and I know this was people were wondering what was going on with Jared Goff, because you won't see a team all year long play around their quarterback the way they did with Jared Goff. And it's partly just what's going on with Jared Goff. It was successful for Detroit. They ran for 200 plus yards and barreled through Pittsburgh's defense, and that kept him in this game. But when Goff was on the sideline, they were wrapping his waist and back, lower back, with this medical tape. You could tell he was in tough shape. He couldn't throw the ball deep.
Which is a tough injury for any athlete.
Get the Blauhard up. Let's get him in there.
And Blauhard, he wins the coin toss.
I don't get they were doing. They were at the point where it was 3rd and 15. It was 16-16 at one
play
point.
Your backup.
It was 3rd and 15, and the Lions are tied 16-16, and they run the ball on 3rd and 15. And Pittsburgh still couldn't do enough with that. They couldn't do enough to stop the run in that situation. So it was a weird game in crappy weather that went on for about 6.5 hours. Happy for the Lions to have a tie. I don't hate ties the same way that some people do.
I hate how they mess with the symmetry of the season, but the NFL already...
We can create symmetry.
I know. It's annoying that we went out of our way to lose symmetry.
Plus, if they go 0-16-1? That would be somehow worse than 0-17 in my mind.
Can I just say, and I don't want to pile on because I'm sure he's a nice guy, but I knew when Ryan Santoso is lining up for that 48-yard kick in overtime, what's that old, like... WWE song, No Chance in Hell.
He didn't have the eye of the tiger.
Look in his eyes, right. Like he needed to be anywhere in the world at that moment.
No.
And he kicked the ball like he wanted to be anywhere else in the world at that moment. And that, you know, speaks to the Lions. Do we have Campbell talking after the game? Because Campbell's like, you know, he just wants a dub, and he'll take a tie, I'm sure, over an L. But, you know, it's tough being the head coach of the Lions.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know. Like I say, I don't. In this twilight zone, I don't know what this is really, and I'm sure I've been in a tie before as a player. For some reason, I can't remember that if it was. So I don't know.
It's fine to cut him off there because he doesn't know what to say either. It's just been a tough season, Greg. But what about the Steelers?
It's about as bad. It's somehow worse than a loss. Okay, that's stupid. It's not worse than a loss. But they tie in the Lions in this sort of game where you also lose Joe Hayden. And Kevin Dotson to injury, and Dotson was ruled out quickly and has been good for them on the offensive line. Like this was a very costly day. I do want to say on Campbell though, I feel like he's part of the issue here. It's like they once benched Peyton Manning for Brock Osweiler. Like put Blau in if Goff is out there and he can't move around, just at least for this one game.
Also like,
it's not like a franchise legend that you're trying to be sensitive about. Go put Blau in and win a ball
game. He's also, you know, I'm not piling on. I guess I could see the strategy because you don't want to tie the game, but he's calling timeouts for the Steelers on the Steelers drive that almost ends with the game-winning field goal attempt to stop the clock, which is helping out Pittsburgh more than it has the possibility to help out Detroit. You know, not piling on the lines, but here's the thing. I will pile on Mason Rudolph that he's not a good backup quarterback. He's not a good starting quarterback. He's not the future in Pittsburgh. I can't talk too much on this game because I only watched overtime, but I read that he missed a ton of throws in this game.
Yeah, 20 incompletions. He also he's throwing to ghosts sometimes, and you just can't try. Chase Claypool being out was no treat for them.
Juju's out. Like, this is a banged-up team, too. It's a good news for the Browns, though, because the Lions, they get the moral victory. In this case, it was a moral tie every other week.
Like, Greg, this is where you and I just have this disconnect.
I'm just saying the Lions have this thing where everyone's like, hey, they're well coached. They tried really hard. And then like everyone's kind of in on the Lions a little bit going into the next game, and then they get their doors blown off. And so that's the Browns.
Oh, well, that's right. Good. From that angle, I hear
that's
right
all I mean.
There is some actual good news for the Browns also, that this is a hideous week for the AFC North. The Ravens go down against the 2-7 Dolphins.
Wow.
The Pittsburgh Steelers barely tie the 0-8 Lions, and the Cincinnati Bengals are in flames on their bye week. So you actually don't lose any ground. I guess you lose half a game, but anyway.
I would just say if you watch this from wire to wire, people aren't going to be running around like waving banners for the Detroit Lions. Like, there were issues. So.
All right, let's move on.
3rd and 10
from
the 12,
Dan Miller.
1-3 set. They throw it back to Diggs in the left corner. And this time he holds on to it in the end zone for the touchdown. The Bills do, in fact, take a 16-3 lead.
Should have seen Mark Stern nod of his head when I said it's good to hear from Dan Miller.
I don't know.
What do you have against Dan Miller?
I mean, I'm not aware of Dan Miller. He hasn't been
Dan
on this
Miller
show a lot
very
lately.
Good. He's very good.
I was just acknowledging that I listened to what you said, and yes, I comprehended your statement.
And can I also say that Dan Miller was a class act when I interviewed him for the pain rankings years back.
This is where it all comes in.
Well, you have this blossoming friendship.
Love Dan Miller.
It's been on ice for about 5 years, but you never know when it can get picked up again. The Jets were just what the doctor ordered for the Bills' slumping offense. That was John Murphy with the call for WGR. Josh Allen picked apart New York's weak defense, throwing for 323 yards and two scores. 38-10 win at the Meadowlands. Allen's offensive line gave him a ton of time to work from the pocket. He reestablished his connection with star receiver Stephon Diggs, who enjoyed his second 100-yard day of the season, had a touchdown. And I'll say this before we kind of get into the game more above the treetops about the Bills. The Jets were a nice confidence booster, but we'll need to see more evidence before declaring that Brian Daboll and company have successfully counteracted the game plans that have stifled the attack this season. But that said, good work, took care of business. The Jets are a mess defensively right now. Mike White was a mess in this game, four interceptions, and that was a great storyline while it lasted. We will be seeing Zach Wilson sooner rather than later, but it was the defense of the Jets that let the Bills do anything they wanted. So we'll see what they look like against better competition, Buffalo. But for one Sunday in northern New Jersey, they were back to their old ways.
I'm trying to remember if I've ever seen this, and it's not to pile on the Jets. We get it. But last four games, they've allowed point totals of 54, 31, 45, and 45. This is like beating up on a lost friend on Madden in like 1994, yeah. Someone who's never touched a console.
The Bills became the fourth team in 5 weeks to roll up more than 400 yards against New York. Some of these yardage totals could be higher, but the blowouts are so grisly that the teams are taking their foot off the pedal unless you're the Patriots and you have no class. But, you know, GM Joe Douglas has so much work to do. To return the Jets to respectability, but they have to dedicate serious resources in the offseason to this defense. Completely overmatched by
and injured. They were overmatched coming into the season for the most part on paper and banged up.
Well, even if you have Carl Lawson in there and Marcus May, you still got to add more talent to this defense.
Absolutely.
Especially in the secondary.
You would expect more out of a defensive coach. I think that's the risk of a defensive coach, but I liked his coordinator higher on offense. They have allowed more points in the last four games, to your point, Mark, than any team since the merger, except for the 2004 Titans, had a four-game stretch, just a little bit worse. But that's it. So they are historically bad in terms of the month. And I know we're saying, like, okay, you want to see the Bills' offense against a better team and all. But we were coming into this thinking, I don't know, Mike White might keep this close. And the Bills, if nothing else, have been the most consistent defense in the NFL. So I'm going to give them some credit for stifling, you know, picking off Mike White four times you know, getting a blowout.
The Bills' defense has been really good this season, even while the offense hasn't been. And Mike White was, by halfway through this game, he was the one seeing ghosts. He was just kind of throwing the ball up for grabs, wasn't even kind of looking downfield. Like, he was a guy, when he had that big game against Cincinnati, a lot of it was underneath, and he was just doing a good job going through his progressions and taking what the defense gave him. Once he got on tilt a little bit in this game and he had to push the ball downfield or felt that he had to, it was a disaster. So, bad stuff. Joe Flacco showed up in this game, so nice move by the Jets, trading
three for
Flacco.
Three.
He got a touchdown.
He might start next week. That wouldn't make any sense. That would be crazy.
Yeah, and it's back to, it doesn't matter. Really, whether it's White or Flacco, neither of those guys are an answer. You need to have the boy back in, and we'll see if he is back in the next time they play. But good win for the Bills. They got out of there, I believe, pretty healthy, and they move onward and upward. Let's move on. Jets stink.
And they get to him.
Half that building filled with Bills fans.
May have lost the ball around
because you put bad product in the field for 10 straight years.
No signal yet. The Colts think they have a takeaway and a fumble recovery. It's Colts ball! It's Colts ball! There's the takeaway. They desperately need it, and they got it.
All right, Matt Taylor. I mean, I feel like when you have to scream about a desperate takeaway needed against the Jaguars, it's not a great look. But at the end of the day, you know, all the guys in Jacksonville drive Cadillacs too, right?
Are Cadillacs like the highest form now?
You know, well, Earl Weaver, the Hall of Fame manager of the Orioles,
right.
He coined it, and that was probably in the 80s when the Cadillacs.
It's like now they all drive Phantoms.
Yeah, Phantoms. Is that a Bentley?
I don't even know.
It's hard to park those cars. That's why I would not.
Extremely difficult.
Just like, where are you putting that?
Parallel parking a Phantom. I would not recommend.
You.
Jonathan Taylor ran for $116 and a touch. The Colts added another score on a blocked punt, and they held on for a 23-17 win over the Jaguars.
It is a Rolls Royce, by the way. And, you know, like, before you come into my mentions and, you know, it's like, oh, these three white guys don't know Phantoms or Rolls Royce. It's like, I paid off that Mazda CX-5 3 years ago. I'm riding that thing until the wheels come off. 10 years from now, I might be riding that thing.
You're one of those.
I don't know.
You're Larry David.
Right.
All the way.
I don't care about
but
cars.
But you know what? Even Larry work. David, where are you going, Greg?
Greg, now Greg is up out of his seat.
You don't have to call that
even
out
to Larry
listener.
David,
I'm just picking up a pen.
On Curb Your Enthusiasm, in later seasons now, he has like a luxury you know, it's a electric car, I believe, but he drove that Prius for the first 10 years of the show. He evolved, Greg. Maybe you can as well. You're
once
a figure of stature
give
now.
Give me Larry David's money in my 50s or 60s or whatever. I'm just saying you can spend that money elsewhere.
That's true. We all make 70 to 85,000, according to Matt Money Smith. So, you know, rolling. you gotta pinch those pennies. Anyway, Jaguars, they got a couple wins this year, and they hung tough in this game. So they're playing hard for Urban Meyer, but the Colts get it done.
I feel bad for Trevor Lawrence. So many drops in this game. I know Jamal Agnew, like, makes a big play as a runner, a long touchdown, but there were multiple drives that I saw killed by Agnew drops where, you know, you're throwing slants to like a return guy who couldn't make other teams. And he's like your ex receiver. It's like the only deep game is just kind of like throwing it up at back shoulder to Marvin Jones. I'm not saying Trevor Lawrence has been incredible, but I think the team letting him down has increased as the season has worn.
Well, they're going to, you know, they'll make a couple big free agent signings in the offseason. And one of these huge narratives will be like, Trevor Lawrence is about to show us who he really is. And I don't doubt that that's true. It's just that I can already feel that being
it's happening. And just like I just talked about another bad team, the Jets are going to – you could, like, look into the crystal ball and you'll see that Joe Douglas is like, we have a great defensive coach now. Let's start to give him more pieces. And they'll spend money and draft defensive players. That's what you're going to see from the Jaguars in this upcoming offseason.
This is what you want to see, though. They outgained the Colts. The defensive improvement seems like – it's there. It's a little shocking that the Colts offense at one point, I think, had eight punts in nine drives, including 5 3 and outs against Jacksonville.
Can't trust Carson.
One of those drives,
I'm a little
one of those
shocked
eight
by
drives
that. I gotta
went
admit.
Over 11 yards. Like that, this Jacksonville defense showed up last week, and I, you know, it was just like, well, that doesn't count. Well, it's like, actually, maybe they are becoming a little bit better. And they gave them a test today. And I checked in late to this because I called the Jaguars a berserker team that can maybe cause a little bit of havoc down the stretch. And at least they didn't totally get wiped today.
Colts are in this race, though.
There you go. Moral victory for you.
Yes, I chalked that up as the best thing that happened to me today.
I was trying to I was like, where's the analysis here? There. Oh, it's about Mark.
I said out of nine drives, they had one that went over 11 yards. That's good on defense in the NFL, by the way.
They were
that's
1-4. So I know this game's ugly. Just move past it.
Okay.
You got your win. They were 1-4, and you get to 5-5. That's a pretty nice accomplishment to be right in there.
We don't have to tell Colts fans don't trust Carson Wentz. They know.
They
go hot and cold on offense, and I need to get eyes on this game, but the quarterback is topsy-turvy.
But he's going to play 75% of the snaps, so people in Philadelphia are loving the Wentz experience right now.
All right, let's take a break, and then we'll hit the rest of the games.
They blitz him, he throws it left, lands in the corner of the end zone, and he walks under the ball. Touchdown to CeeDee Lamb, his second, and he comes up grinning at Dalton Schultz and shrugging his shoulders saying, that was too easy.
It was too easy for the Cowboys on Sunday. Brad Sham, the Sham God for KRLD. Dak Prescott threw a couple touchdowns, Zeke scored a couple times. Deshaun Wright recovered a block punt in the end zone. Cowboys roll 43-3 over an overwhelmed and seemingly unprepared Falcons team. How out of control was this blowout? Dallas's halftime lead was 36-3. Halftime. Greggy, that's a Dan Quinn revenge game, baby.
That is. How out of control was it? We had an entire quarter of Josh Rosen versus Cooper Rush.
Wow.
What a gift.
Both teams just
yikes.
Called off the dogs. If you look at the box score and it's 43, like this game play, it was exactly what you thought it was. Like if you don't want to watch it on Game Pass, you can pretty much guess what happened. Dak Prescott last week was definitely misfiring, didn't seem right. He looked like the Dak from the first 8 or 9 weeks here. One thing that struck me, though, in this game was the fourth downs. two big ones by the Cowboys, which one was a touchdown and one led to a touchdown. And it got me thinking about Mike McCarthy and the aggressiveness that he's had this year. And I started thinking, like, we got to get a Mike McCarthy versus Aaron Rodgers with, like, Mike McCarthy calling for fourth downs, and somehow that he gets back at Aaron Rodgers. Like, this is what I want in the NFC playoffs. And these are the two teams that I feel I trust the most in terms of will be there in the divisional round, if only because I know they're going to win their divisions and I know they're both really good.
That is a luscious idea. I'm totally on board with that. And I mean, you can look at the point total. Obviously, their offense is high powered, but I liked this Falcons offense, especially over the last 3 or 4 weeks. The Cowboys did not have DeMarcus Lawrence. They did not have Randy Gregory. Matt Ryan at his lowest passer rating. The pregame shows were all about Matt Ryan knows Dan Quinn's defense. By the way, Dan Quinn knows Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan's
nobody
in a
knows
new
anything.
Offense. And none of that stuff matters. But it's like the Falcons' experience has been up and down because they have been really enjoyable to watch. You can kind of see it coming together on offense. And then they completely got manhandled.
Well, Cordarrelle Patterson suffered an ankle injury early, tried to play through it, couldn't. Kind of look like a high ankle sprain. They're playing on Thursday night, by the way, against the once Patterson is gone, this team is no longer fun. You got Wayne Gallman for 15 carries.
That tells you it's a bit of, you know, house built of sticks and
right. They're not. It's not like they're winning
house
this game
cards.
Or being
sticks and mirrors.
Yeah, it's a house of cards. They're not winning this game or being competitive with Patterson, but they didn't have anything. Dorrance Armstrong had an incredible game.
Sticks and stones actually might be sturdy.
There is something about
depending on the craftsmanship.
It's a house of cards.
I know, but we're talking about things that men of the past did. We've
mirrors.
Never done any of these things that they did
mirrors
that they
tricky.
Create like cliches.
What do you mean?
It's like, oh, it was a real tough day down at the mill. It's like none of us have ever been to a mill. I mean, just we don't. We're talking about men.
Listen, I'm a homeowner. I do a lot of work outside now.
Well, okay, I exclude you.
These hands just
I
calluses.
Exclude you from the commentary on modern men. You alone are doing the work that men used to.
I worked at a strawberry
well.
Farm. I worked at a strawberry farm
42 years ago for like $14 an hour. Please.
I mean, I was driving, so it wasn't that tough.
Give me a break. Getting lost.
You had to get there.
You were getting lost.
You had to
That's
get there at like 5:30.
You go get lost.
I'm picturing just like flashbacks where it's like the gauzy look to the camera, and it's Mark at Camp Happiness at the lake with his girlfriend and all his buddies listening to Collective Soul, and just Greg just like driving to nowhere in that strawberry truck. No idea where the f*** he's going. No MapQuest. No cell phone.
Dishwashing, that's like going to the mill. Did a lot of dishwashing.
I'd get
multiple
lost too, Greg,
restaurants.
So I'm not
that was
you.
Tough.
I'm just saying you did get lost.
Where were we? Oh, I just want to say this. The Falcons, and on top of like a really ugly game, it just stinks that this is just where things are. But everyone destroying the Falcons on Twitter when it was 28-3 to the point where the Falcons Twitter says, yeah, we know. It's a bad day
it's
for
very
the Falcons.
Ponderous.
And then, you know, to get off, it didn't last for long because 30 seconds after it went to 28-3, they had a punt block to make it 36.
Nice job by the Falcons.
36 yeah. to 3.
Got themselves
it
out
is,
of the corner there.
I think we should just stop with the 28-3. It's been long enough. It really, truly is the most painful loss I can think of in the history of sports because yeah. every time there's any 28-3, it gets brought up.
Yeah, but you love your Saints and, you know, they're your pet team yeah. and everything. Like, they're the ones
oh, yeah, they're
that
the
are
ones
into it more than anyone else. You should go on the Saints podcast with those dudes and say
–
Adam and Ryan.
Saints
you should
Twitter
say,
podcast.
You say, hey, guys, next time you're on the Saints Twitter podcast, you say – announcement before we get into this, I got a monologue, hit the miss of music, and then just be like, no more 28-3, and then give like a detailed reasoning
you
why.
Don't condone it basically. You stand
I just
out
think
and
it's been enough
it,
it's been enough we
not just I don't condone it. I command you to stand down, Saints Nation.
No? I'm not gonna do that. Okay. What by the way, like why is Dak Prescott running over a linebacker when it's 36-3 late in the third quarter? I'm all about, everyone's always about like protecting your players, and yet they leave in their players in these meaningless
always.
Situations even
so
late
strange.
In the third quarter. You could take them out. Why is Zeke
the
out
Bills
there not
the
at 100%?
Thing. The Bills did the same
It's very
thing
strange because they're so concerned in the preseason, and then one in the regular season, no one thinks
Well, you
about.
Don't condone that either.
And you know,
you
it's
don't.
A great way to avoid people scold. Taunting you for 28-3 forever. Same thing, like I've gotten like the butt fumble gift sent to me for 10 straight years. Don't get the butt fumble done to you. Don't blow a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl. This is sports, and sometimes it's just cruel. All right, let's move.
and Gordon is knocked down. Football comes loose. Eagles come up with it. Slay picks it up. Slay running with the ball. And Slay takes off to the far side of the field, to the 30, to the 40. Slay running away from people. Slay at the 40, the 30, the 20, 10, 5, touchdown, I think, Darius Slay.
You could tell Merrill Reese in his voice wasn't sure whether he was calling a game-changing touchdown for WIP, but he was. Cornerback Darius Slay returned a fumble 82 yards for a score. That held up upon review. It was a good call. And rookie Devonta Smith continued his surge. He had two touchdown catches from Jalen Hurts in the first half. The Eagles roll over the Broncos 30-13. Last week, the Broncos go to Dallas and embarrass the Cowboys. And then 7 days later, the Cowboys make the Falcons look like a Little League team, a Pop Warner team, and the Broncos go right back to looking like also-rans, mediocre, ham and eggers. And that was kind of my takeaway from this game. My other big takeaway, other than the Broncos are mediocre and they were a tease last week, is that Jalen Hurts was so good in the first half of this game. He only threw three passes in the second half, and he threw an interception in the second half. But in the first half, with what he was able to do with his arm and with his legs, again, he is showing signs that this is a guy that you should give serious thought to continuing to develop and stay the course with Jalen Hurts. I really liked what I saw in this game. The Eagles are 4-6. All four of their wins have come on the road. So just an interesting season they're having. And I thought one more note on the Broncos and bad day for Teddy Bridgewater all around. Greg, you're going to really struggle with this game tape because in addition to the phantom tackle attempt on the Darius Slay touchdown, which was not a great look, he said he was trying to force the action the other direction, but it looked like he was trying to make a business decision there. He just missed a lot of plays in this game. He struggled, and they stalled out in the red zone repeatedly. They stalled at the 3, the 10, and the 11. That was the difference in this game.
Right, they were living in the red zone in the second half of the game, trying to make a comeback. I am impressed and surprised about how quickly the Eagles have flipped this offense. Like, everyone was begging them to just run the ball more for the first 6 weeks, and then they started to, and they're the best running team in the league. The last 3 weeks, they are the number one offense, according to expected points allowed. Now, you got to look at the opponents, but they've been wildly efficient for 3 straight weeks, with this very run heavy approach.
Yeah, when they can run the ball and then Hurts can make plays with his legs, and this Devonta Smith connection, which has really come on the last 2 weeks, he had an incredible, it was a great stat. His touchdown catch, the first one, was over Patrick Surtain, the second, or is it the third? Is it the second or third Surtain?
I mean, the second to play in the NFL.
And I think he had less than like a half yard of separation. It was the smallest window for any touchdown reception this season. That's the type of play a star receiver makes, and he made one there. So the Eagles are a team to kind of keep an eye on here.
They're only one game back in the NFC. I have a crazy stat for you right now. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Out of the 32 teams in the NFL, only 5 are more than 1 loss out of the playoffs. 5.
I believe it.
There's 12 in the AFC that are in that mix and 15 in the NFC. The Lions are the only team that's not within 1 loss in the, if you really want to stretch it and say the Giants in Washington are only 1 loss behind.
As George Bush once said, mission accomplished.
Right.
That's what the league wanted, and they are here.
And if you would have told me, if you like traveled from the future back to August and gave me that stat, I'd like cross my finger and be like, come on, the Jets, you got to be in the mix. You got to be one of the teams. But they are not. Now, before we move on, Greg, I'd like you to speak on the Teddy play. He's catching a ton of heat for it. Business decision in a big spot. I mentioned it on Twitter, and all the Broncos fans got angry. He's got 2 bad knees, or his knee was shredded. It's like, I get all that.
Right. People kill quarterbacks sometimes for like throwing their body at offensive players when fumbles or defensive players when fumbles are being returned and getting hurt. It's like, was he really going to tackle him there?
Well, he could have slowed him down. led to a tackle. Could have made the tackle.
I don't know. Maybe
he is a football player.
What I do love is he did a very demonstrative lowering like of his head, just like lowered his head like 8 feet away from the player, like that meant anything.
Like a
to
step back three type.
I want Teddy's career to continue. That play did not decide the game. I'm happy.
It decided
that
his fate in
healthy.
His locker room going forward, but you know.
I hope not. His approval rating in general with Broncos fans went from like it felt like it was pretty high, and now it's just out the window. One play.
Put it this way, Greg. If you would have
hey, how about don't fumble the ball in a big spot, Melvin Gordon? Have you ever seen Gordon fumble the ball in a big spot? I'm just saying, between Broncos fans and Chargers fans, they know what I'm talking about. A fourth and one play, he gets the 2 yards and fumbles. How about a little attention on that?
Happened
none of this
Washington
would have happened
a couple weeks ago.
I have
same
deflected.
Thing.
That's
I have deflected.
That's what you learned. What was it? Debate club? Not debate club. What was it?
It was Model Congress. Model there were no Congress. Lessons in Model Congress.
That was
no
an
one
awesome
ever gave
deflection.
Us tips or
I know,
anything.
But Greg, you were the president
natural.
Of it?
No strategy.
You were the president
Everyone
of it.
Got to be president once you were senior well, because so, like, there's only seven
did you
people
see,
in it.
You learned to seek power just, at an early age.
Let me just say this.
I was and the then only we'll, person in my class.
We won't please. Dwell on it, but you see what Bruce Arians did with Tom Brady today? He didn't yeah. let him off the hook. He held him accountable because ultimately that's what's best for Tom Brady and his team. That's how I think you should be with Teddy right now. Don't let him off the hook. Let him know what he did was not acceptable, and we don't think that's going to happen again because we know you're a man of high integrity and character, but we were disappointed today.
What I'm not going to be is a Twitter scout. I need to know more about what happened on that play. I need to see different angles before I just start flaming people.
You're not going to like all the angles because I've seen them. All right, which takes us to Sunday Night Football.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to exactly. guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on
I'm
top of
that. I'm like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbionica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbionica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbionica.com, Symbiotica.com.
Oh, Sunday night.
Ton of time. Escapes. Goes to the end zone. It's Williams there, and he makes the grab.
Oh, my goodness.
Darrell Williams.
So, of course, you're going to take a running back and just throw up a prayer and expect him to make a play like that. Are you kidding me?
Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth with the call. And some of the descriptor words there by Collinsworth. Incredible. Are you kidding me? We haven't heard those when describing the Chiefs' attack in a while. But it was back on Sunday Night Football from Vegas. A 41-14 win for the Chiefs, who outscore their division rival 24-7 in the second half, 14 zilch in the fourth quarter. And Patrick Mahomes threw it 50 times, and he translated those 50 throws into 406 yards, 5 touchdowns, 0 picks. Mark, this is the Chiefs offense that everyone was waiting for. It has returned, and at the expense of a Raiders team that is now reeling.
I think we'll find out if it's fully returned, but I saw a Raiders defense tonight that could not take advantage of a number of rather reckless throws from Patrick Mahomes downfield as well. And the Raiders simply no-showed in the first half. And I do trust that with Patrick Mahomes, this is who he is. Like the whole, like, he's in the slump. He's not the same person. Should you be taking chances like this? That always felt a little bizarre to me. But do you trust, Greg, that this offense is fixed based off of this game? I just think the Raiders are missing pieces and parts.
I mean, you don't throw away the whole rest of the season. Just as annoying as people saying, like, oh, the Chiefs aren't coming back from this, is the people that are pointing to one game and say, like, they're back. How many times do we need to watch an NFL season to learn there's going to be, like, ebbs and flows and all that? But I never got the idea that changing who Patrick Mahomes was as a player is some sort of solution. And, yeah, like, the turnover luck turns his way tonight. But this was, like, an amazing performance by them, too. Kelce was feeling himself early. Them throwing short to Tyreek Hill was working great. The play calls were great. You know, Damian Williams has a game, like, for him to remember. And I think more importantly than all this is that Chiefs' defensive resurgence over the last month seems pretty real. Like, Chris Jones was living out there tonight. Tyrann Mathieu shuts down Darren Waller. And that's a solid month now of the Chiefs' defense being good. Good enough.
Yeah, look out. That's what I'll say. I'm buying in, and I know they've had, even this season, they've had big weeks, and then you think they're out of it, and then they go back into a funk. All right, could happen again, but I think about tonight in the immediate moments after it's over, and I'm saying to myself, okay, they're going to run away with this division now. They are atop the AFC West. And you look at the rest of the division, the Raiders look a hell of a lot like the Raiders of the last couple of years under John Gruden now, where they get you kind of sucked in, myself included, and they start to fade, and there's some different factors clouding their situation this year, but it's more of the same. They're now a 5-4 team. The Chargers look like, to me, a potential pretender. They're 5-4. The Broncos, they showed who they were today, even after that great win in Dallas. So that division is there for the taking, and the Chiefs, there is a very real chance that they've gone through their ugly period, and they're about to start rolling. And if you can now combine, Greg, this offense – out of a slump and performing again at an elite level with a defense that's improving, that's won Super Bowls for them in the past.
They picked the right year to go through a prolonged slump. I mean, because they've come out of this, to your right point, in amazing shape. Like, okay, Tennessee is a couple games up in the loss column. It's going to be tough to get the one seed. Other than that, it's all right there in front of them, and you look at their opponents and you look at the rest of the division, nothing seems unbeatable. I do think this night was different, though, Mark. Not just like that, okay, Damian Williams outguns Abram for that touchdown and, you know, they make a couple big plays, but like the ball was coming out on time. Mahomes was pretty decisive in what he was doing. It didn't feel fluky. They had a good game plan for an opponent that they know well, and they destroyed him on both sides. It was bad, you know, it was pretty complete to have that kind of night.
Yeah, and I think the Raiders, you know, they're trying to climb back into the game. They came out with a really nice opening drive to the second half, but then you get into the scenario where DeSean Jackson makes his first catch as a Raider. It's a 40-yarder to the Kansas City 17. He then fumbles it in a very strange sort of loop-de-loop move where
the game changed on that play.
It changed, and then on the next possession, Carr threw a prayer downfield, and it's picked off by Daniel Sorensen, who's been victimized for months straight here. So I think like they had a chance to climb back in. They are missing pieces on offense, and they're not the equal of the Chiefs tonight. And the Chiefs, I thought I was saying, you know, on Friday, like, will they come out looking a little bit different? And they did early on, the way they moved the ball with passes behind the line of scrimmage tonight that the Raiders, to deactivate some of like the Las Vegas pass rush, and then they start throwing it deep. So it's the antidote arrived.
I wish people could have heard Dan, though, in the film room on that touchdown throw that we just heard.
Damian Williams one, yeah.
Yeah, to start this broadcast. And it's fourth down. They had just gotten the fake punt. Nice job there by Townsend. Nice job by Dave Taub. Legendary special teams.
Taubhead.
16 years. In the last 16 years, Dan, he's had a top five special teams DVOA 13 out of 15, 16 times. Number one this year.
I need to study up on my Taub.
We were talking Taub. Sorry, I got distracted. Yeah. And Dan, when it's fourth down and that play says, like, we need a highlight, need a highlight, need a highlight on this play, need a highlight, need a highlight. And then there it's up in the air and he gets it and he gets a touchdown and the place went crazy.
There's the highlight. And we got it. And a little peek behind the curtain. Should also know that a few minutes after that, Chris Rose rolled up to the back row of the theater and had a really nice conversation with Mark about the Browns. Mark was fully engaged, I thought, Greg. And that, you know, it did make me think. I pondered it because coming off a win, Mark sometimes likes to depress his feelings, keep them inside. But a loss, he's more open. So it's almost like with Cleveland fans, it is the losing ultimately that brings you together.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, to be real, that's the second great conversation that we had. Or I would say in-depth convo, because earlier in the day, you stopped by our cubes before you were there, Dan, and I thought I couldn't have been more, you know, welcome and opened arm to discussing the day's events with Chris.
It was
Rose.
Good to see you guys get back together. I was wondering, watching that interaction, have you taken, Mark, like, lessons from Derek Carr? Because, you know, he's talked a lot about forgiveness and being there for people. And it seems like maybe it was Chris Rose that was doing the forgiving. I don't know. But you seem to open your heart and
I mean,
and
I
let
think
him
on,
back
even
in.
On last Tuesday's show with his voicemail, I could have found a couple things if I wanted to be annoyed with, and you know,
he made another mustache reference.
Yeah, and it's like I'm not claiming that I have some sort of Burt Reynolds facial hair scenario going on. It's the opposite of that. I understand that, but he's pointed it out multiple times, and that's fine.
When it happens again, yeah, it seems like that's an issue you might have to rectify with him privately. So we're not out of the woods yet. But back to the Raiders, I'd be very, very nervous if I'm a Raiders fan. It's just, it does feel like it's trending downward. And Derek Carr, Greg, I know you've been out front on the Derek Carr resurgence bandwagon. You've had him high up in your QB index all year. But he made some throws in this game, arm punts. He got away with one. He got picked off on another. It just looked like a quarterback trying to do too much as the season starts to crumble. And that's very familiar if you've been following this team the last few years.
And familiar if you watched them last week, too. So that part concerns me coming out of the bye. That second half against the Giants was similar to the second half of this game where he just started going for it. That said, it's like he goes 25 for 35, 261, 2. And yeah, like it didn't feel like it was on Derek Carr. Everyone
wasn't on him, but
right.
Once
it started going bad, he got very desperate. But the good things that the Raiders had been doing all seemed to go away. Their pass rush, their run game, all of it.
I do want to see this.
Yes.
Kansas City versus Dallas next week. Before I know what's going to happen this week, we're already there, and I'm just going to – I'll just cling on to the train and run behind it. But it's like, yes, the Chiefs are back. Everything's back to normal. Like, let's just see.
Why do things upset you so much?
No, because it's like – because it's such a week-to-week league.
But why are you saying you need to cling on to the train and run behind it?
Because
you're not.
It's too tiresome.
Stand in front of it.
It's too tiresome to stand in front of a train.
But then
– a narrative train.
Is this why you're chaotic neutral? Then say, I am not on board with the Chiefs resurgence yet. I don't think we should take too much from this game. I need to see it next week.
Because I think that the thing is they probably were never – even close to as junky as we thought.
Oh, they were pretty junky.
In terms of their final destination. And they aren't what we saw tonight going forward without interruption. They're just something in the middle. And
I'm just saying, they were pretty junky.
Ooh, Cowboys-Chiefs, though? Is that a CBS game? Give it to me. Romo, sign me up.
Who's got the first-round pick in the draft next week? It might be the Zeus.
I'm last.
Final stats here. KC, 516 total yards to 299 for the Raiders. Turnovers, KC just had one, which is a big improvement for them this season. They dominated time of possession over 35 minutes and 29-15 first downs. So almost doubled them up first down on the road. That right there, Greg Rosenthal, is a statement win by the Chiefs, who said the division is still ours. And guess what? I know we lose the tiebreaker to the Titans and the Bills head to head, but do not count us out from getting red hot. I'm all in on the Chiefs. Make me look dumb next
now
week.
Now you're all in.
Make me look dumb.
Okay. It's a Fox game. Don't hate that either. Love all the Troy Aikman in my life.
All right.
And so that'll be a good one.
Greg is getting on. I've been pro Troy Aikman for so long.
And you don't like him on your
more
corner.
More territory that Greg is attempting to arrest. He did it on our Friday show. His final thought was some sort of glowing 20-second Troy Aikman thing. And it's like,
me a lot. It's been like a growing appreciation. It's really the Thursday night football thing. You get him twice a week, but Thursday night, I'm able to just sit back, enjoy, watch the game, he's great.
Let's also call out that there's a growing distance between you and Tony Romo and your belief in his commentating.
You're filling in a void, Greg.
There could be something there. I don't think it's been his best season.
All right. There you go. That is the Sunday of week 10. We keep rolling. We'll be back on Tuesday with our latest episode of the Around the NFL podcast. So check that out. The wheel keeps turning. Ricky, do you have any thoughts before we say goodbye?
No, you guys did a great show.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Good job.
And you did really nice work behind the glass.
Thanks.
All this love. Still what a great night.
All right, let's go home. Succession night.
That's what daddy and mommy do together. Put the kids to bed.
Not all they do together.
That's all you can know about it.
All right, enough of that. Till Tuesday. Feed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.